Hi everyone, welcome to The Vandal Theory, a podcast about science and research at the University of Idaho. I'm your host for the day, Kyle Fonensteel, Media Relations Manager here at U of I. I'm joined by my co-host and longtime podcast host, Lee Cooper.
Hi everyone, I'm Lee, science writer and editor here at University of Idaho.
Thanks for coming on the show, Lee.
I'm super excited. This is such a wonderful local topic.
Me too. Today, we're here to talk about how to plan cities long-term and how Idaho's demographics are changing over time. So, to start, what do you think is more important to know in planning cities? How populations grow over time, or how they change over time?
I would think both. Obviously, you need to know how many people are around. That's why we have a census, things like that. But I would also think moving 20, you know, newly graduated tech folks here from San Jose, California is going to be very different than bringing in 20 retirees from Florida or 20 families from Iowa. Like, they're going to have very different needs and desires in their new community. So I would think both are super important.
You're definitely right that both are really, really important. Our guest today is Jaap Vos, a professor of planning and natural resources at University of Idaho. We'll talk about why both really influence how we experience our communities and what they look like, and how there's actually a lot of folks leaving the state at the same time as folks are moving into Idaho. So it gets a little bit more complicated when you try to drill in on how Idaho's population is changing, and it's pretty complicated to track. But by using some pretty novel data, Jaap was able to find answers to how Idaho's demographics are changing, who's coming into the state, who's leaving, and he's got a better picture to let city planners and communities decide what their cities are going to look like 20 to 30 years from now.
My name is Jaap Vos. I'm a professor of planning and natural resources at the University of Idaho's College of Natural Resources. I have a PhD in regional planning, and I have a master's degree in environmental science. I'm really interested in planning, and I do a lot of research on especially on rural communities and on communities in Idaho.
So to start, can you unpack what city planning is?
What is city planning is actually a really surprisingly difficult question, I think, right? So the word city planning, I think, by itself are pretty simple. It simply refers to planning that you need for a city or a community in the future. And it's not fundamentally different than thinking about planning for an event or to do something, right? If I think about my wedding, we have a planner who is planning the wedding, right? But what city planners actually do is much more complicated. Planners try to maintain and improve on the quality of life in the communities in which we live. That's really what we're trying to do. We plan for the public interest. So they try to make sure that there is infrastructure in place, that there are no incompatible uses next to each other, that there is enough housing available, that people are able to get to the places they need to be. Those are the kind of things that planners do. Now, in an ideal world, the way that planners do that is by helping people in a community formulate a clear vision of what they want the future for their community to look like. Right. And that vision is then part of a comprehensive plan. It's written down in a comprehensive plan. And that comprehensive plan then basically outlines what the residents of that community want their community to look like in about 25 years. And city planners then translate that vision and that comprehensive plan into land use regulations, such as zoning, that help guide the future development of the community. And one of the biggest challenges with that is that most of the time, we don't actually build things as planners. We don't have that authority. We just kind of, we outline the circumstances under which it is becoming more likely that the community in the future will look like the way the community is envisioned. And so I can't build, a planner does not build a house, a planner. It's almost like we make up the rules, right? We set the rules and then other people are going to play.
So it sounds like rather than just predicting the future, you're being very proactive and deliberative to shape communities.
That's really what we're trying to do, right? So we're really trying to be proactive. In the reality, since we have such little control, we often end up being more reactive in the way that we deal about cities, right? All of a sudden there is growth and we just respond to the growth. But in an ideal world, the community had already made the comprehensive plan, the vision is already there, everything is written down, so now we just follow the plan. Unfortunately, in most places, that's not the way it works.
So how do you go about planning what a city is going to look like? How is this type of work different than other types of research?
That's a complicated question. The ideal process is really the way as I described it, right? So the community comes together, the planner kind of facilitates the meeting, and the community comes up with a vision that then is nicely written down in a comprehensive plan. Everybody understands the plan. Did you notice how I said green for a second? It's because I was thinking about a really good comprehensive plan. And that really good comprehensive plan is actually a plan that I learned about when I must have been 7 or 8 years old, and I was in my world studies class, and we learned about the Green Heart. So I'm Dutch. So in the Netherlands, we have a nationwide kind of general plan about what the intention is that the nation will look like, where the cities are, what the cities will look like, and all that stuff. And part of that was the Green Heart. Now, if you're familiar with the Netherlands, there is this ring of cities. It's Amsterdam and Utrecht and The Hague and Leiden and Rotterdam and The Hague. And it's called the Randstad because it looks like a horseshoe. And in the middle of that horseshoe is green space, and it's called the Green Heart. Now, that comprehensive plan, that vision in that comprehensive plan is so clear that 53 years later, right? I'm 59 now, 53 years later, I still remember the power of the Green Heart. We will not build in the Green Heart. So a good plan, when planners write down that comprehensive plan, it should be something that really sticks with people. It really should be something that they understand, that they can communicate, so that anybody who wants to build something or do something in the city can actually follow that because everybody understands it. Now, all of that, of course, is dependent on normally the private. I can only make the rules. The private sector then comes in and builds stuff, right? The private sector comes in, they have land, they build their development and all those kind of things. I cannot force them. So sometimes they don't show up. I had a great plan, but nobody wants to live in my town, so it doesn't occur. Now, what's happening in most places in Idaho is currently the exact opposite. We have way more people coming than we had ever anticipated. And now we're trying to deal with that. So how do you deal with that then? Because when you think about it, as a planner, I don't have all that many tools. It's private property, right? Everybody can do with their property as they want. And as a planner, I only have the right to limit your use of private property as long as it's done to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, right? So I can make sure that there is a road. If a road makes sense, I can make sure that there is space for a school. All those things are there to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the general public. But I cannot just tell you what you need to build. So I can only put regulations in place. So if I have a lot more development than I had anticipated, and that's what's going on in Idaho, right? 10 years ago when I came here, and I'm one of those people that came here, right? I always told people I'm planning for the middle of nowhere because, you know, there was nobody really. And I don't know if you remember the t-shirts that people had, right? They had a t-shirt with a map of Idaho and on the top it said Iowa, right? Because people didn't even realize where Idaho really was. Now everybody, of course, knows where Idaho is and everybody wants to be in Idaho. And as planners, we continuously are asking ourselves, well, how do we deal with this growth, which is actually much more than we ever anticipated in our comprehensive plan? I'm really a planning researcher. I'm really not a planner, right? Planners work for government. They work for cities. They work for counties. They work in the private sector. But I'm a researcher. I work at the university. So what I try to do is try to predict what the future will look like. I try to predict the things that are changing in the future. That basically means that I try to extrapolate existing trends. So I look at what has happened with population in the past, and I try to kind of extrapolate that to the future. I talk with local planners. I look at what happened in other places. I talk with real estate people, talk with economists, I talk with legislators, whoever I can get a hold of, I talk with, right? And then with that, I try to get as good an idea as I possibly can about how many people I think will move to an area or will leave an area. But I also look at who will be interested in the future in investing in our economy or in our community. Who owns the land? Who is buying up land? What will the needs be of the people that are moving in? What are the needs of the people that are leaving? Do the people that come in, do they have jobs? Will they need jobs? Do they have children? Well, we need to have to build schools. So I try to predict all those kind of things. So compared to other researchers, what my problem is, I don't describe things that have happened in the past. I don't really care about that because as a planner, I'm interested in the future. So I have to think about the future. I don't have data that is all that reliable. So I try to get all this data and all this insight from a large variety of different sources, some more reliable than another one. And with that, I try to say something about the future. Now, scientists, that's not exactly science, right? Because as a science, I try to control the environment and I change one variable and then I see if that variable made a difference. That's not what I do. But the challenge with planning at the same time is that if I do it wrong, it could really have some serious consequences. Think about if I think a certain amount of people are going out, coming in, and it's much more, I might not be able to deal with all these people that are coming up. Now, when you think about it, if I have too many more people moving in than I ever expected, well, I'll probably not have enough houses. So home values go up rapidly. So we now have to deal with increasing home values. I might not have enough road capacity, so now people are stuck in rush hour traffic. I might not have enough schools for all the kids that are coming in. There might not be enough jobs. But at the same time, there might not be enough people to fill all the jobs that are coming because the people that came in kept their job. Let's say that they were working somewhere in the tech industry and they moved and they're working from home now. So there's all these different variables, and that's where my research becomes really different and difficult from other people. It becomes hard to publish because it's basically a whole bunch of different things that you take together and then try to make, in reality, an educated guess about what the future will look like. Knowing that what you say has tremendous consequences for how you think about the future of your community.
Thank you very much. I want to go back to some of the research you were mentioning about what's happening in Idaho. You talk about an influx of new residents coming in and steady departures of existing residents. Could you talk more about your process to understand this? How did you set out to answer this question, and why did you turn to the data sources that you did?
One of the important things that I need to know, or that planners need to know, is how many people are coming to a community, right? Or how many people are leaving a community. Now, we all know that 2020 census data is still not out, right? We have had some of it released, but it's still not completely out. And we're already in 2022. And I'm trying to make decisions about 2025, but the reality is I don't even know exactly how much the population was in 2020. So that's the first issue. The second issue is that, especially in rural places, some of the census data that is around is not all that reliable because it's done through a community survey, which is a sample. And if the sample doesn't happen to be correct exactly in a rural community, then the data for this rural community can be off quite a bit. So I try to find data that might give us some kind of idea, better idea about population. And what I looked at was data from the Idaho Transportation Department about driver's licenses. And all that we have is, so if you come to Idaho or if you leave Idaho, you have to surrender your license from where you're coming from to get the license from where you're going to. So if you're moving to Idaho, I moved from Florida to Idaho. Within 90 days, I have to change my driver's license to an Idaho driver's license. All right, so I have to hand in my Florida driver's license and I get my Idaho driver's license. So that's the data that I'm trying to use. Similarly, if I would now move to California, which my data shows is a very unlikely move, but if I would move to California, I would go to California and within 90 days or 60 days, it depends on what state you're in, you have to surrender your driver's license and get the driver's license from that state. Important to realize students do not have to do that. So if you're from California and you go to Boise State or you go to the University of Idaho or whatever university you go, you're not surrendering your driver's license. You can actually keep your out-of-state driver's license. Okay. So I looked at that data as an approximation for what is going on with our population. Now realize not everybody has a driver's license. There's a clear bias. If you're under 16, you probably didn't have a driver's license. If you don't have a car, you probably don't have a driver's license. If you're 90-year-old, you might not run to DMV right away to change your driver's license. So there is a systematic bias in that data. But still, since it's collected every month, it can give you some idea about what is going on. And the original intent was to use the DMV data and then compare it with the census data to see what the relationship was between the two so that I could come up with a better tool for planners to actually predict what the population was looking like in Idaho and what the trends were like.
So we all hear that Idaho is going through massive growth, but you also talk about how it isn't just about growth. It's also about demographic change. Can you help us make sense of what's happening?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm always a little hesitant when people say massive growth, right? And it's something that typically gets in a newspaper with massive growth and all this kind of stuff. And yes, we were the fastest growing state between 2010 and 2020, I believe, or the second fastest growing state between, you know. So yes, we're growing fast, but it's all per percentage. The amount of people that are moving in is relatively small if you compare it to a place like Florida, where the numbers are just higher, right? But yes, we're growing pretty fast. And what is interesting to the if you look at the data, is from 2011 to 2021, every year we had more people moving into Idaho. But it was every year a little bit more. There is no exponential growth. It's not all of a sudden that we're seeing this tremendous amount of people that are coming in since 2020. No, it has actually been increasing almost as a straight line. So you think of the year, every year we have a slightly larger amount of people coming to Idaho. Straight line, and it's beautiful for a prediction perspective. I can probably just extend that straight line. I don't know how long. I mean, for the last 10 years, it has been a perfectly straight line, right? That's ideal. But what is very different is people moving out of Idaho. And I think often we just think people are moving in, but we also have a very significant amount of people moving out of Idaho. And what is interesting with that one is that really changes from year to year. We have years where we have very few people moving out of Idaho, and we have years where tremendously large amount of people are moving out of Idaho. Now, what causes that? I'm not really sure. The bottom line with that is, while I wouldn't be willing to say that we are seeing massive growth, I'm more than happy to say we're seeing massive change, right? We had 255,000, we grew with about 255,000 people according to the census between 2010 and 2020. But we actually had 285,000 people, so 30,000 people more, moving out of the state, right? So think about it. We grew with 255,000, but we actually had 285,000 people moving out of the state. That means you have to add those two numbers to actually get the total number of people that moved here, which is closer to almost 500,000 people. So at 500,000 people moving in and 200 and something thousand people moving out. And that's how you do it. But then all of a sudden you start realizing how big that change really is. Those were all people. So if you start thinking about not growth, but change, now then the interesting thing becomes that actually goes up rapidly. So we're currently changing much more rapidly than we did 10 years ago. And that's not a nice straight line.
Why is the distinction between growth and change so important to you and other city planners?
So if you just say that there were so many people moving in, right? So this 250,000 people, then I just have to plan for growth. But the reality is, on top of that, there's all these people that aren't the same people that were here before. Now, I don't know if those people, do they have the same jobs? Are they having the same amount of children? Do they have the same educational attainment? Do they have the same political views? I do not know. So you could have some really dramatic changes in your community. So the community, besides the growth, it also has to deal with a lot of change. The community is not, Idaho is not as stable as it once was, right? Where one time we really had hardly any change. We were in the middle of nowhere. Now we're really changing rapidly. The population is changing. The way people think about stuff is changing. And my argument is that we really need to understand that better. And we really need to understand that change and stop talking about growth, which, yes, there is some growth, but that change is much more relevant. And I thought about in my own cul-de-sac, right? So and it's probably pretty systematic for what was actually happening in Idaho. It has been a very stable community. But in the last couple of years, we had two families move out and two new families move in. Well, it's only five families that live in a cul-de-sac. The number of two is not that dramatic, but the change is huge, right? In that little community, the whole dynamic of our cul-de-sac has changed with these two new families moving in. And that's why I argue you need to look at change, not at growth. So our cul-de-sac didn't grow, right? The growth was zero. We still have the same five houses. But there has been some very significant change. So my argument to a lot of people is you need to start looking at change. And even if you look at a place like Boise, which is really not growing that fast because, you know, we can't grow that fast anymore because we don't have that much land. But anybody who goes to Boise will tell you Boise has really changed. Yeah, we have really changed, but our population relatively has not grown nearly as much. You know, our population growth would not indicate all this change. But it is really changing. And then, of course, in a place like Boise, we have people that are moving out because Boise is getting too busy, it's too big, there is too much going on, and then they move out and other people move in. So to me, it's that change, that dynamic of change that you need to start looking at rather than just the growth.
I'm also hoping that you might look ahead with us and help us predict what's in Idaho's future in terms of population growth and change. You mentioned it's been a pretty steady line for growth in recent years. Do you have any insight where it's headed in the future?
Well, so if I look at population growth, right, people coming to Idaho, the expectation would be that that just kind of continues, right? Not that it's going to go all of a sudden much higher, not that it's all of a sudden going to go be much less, but the amount of people that are, it's an interesting thing, right? Once you have discovered, every year there's a couple of more people that are discovering you. So it's this kind of steadily increase of people. So I think that's not going to change. We've been discovered by individuals as a place to live, by investors as a place to invest their money, as national builders as a place to sell their product. I mean, if you just think about it, you know, why would it change? Idaho, compared to other places, is still a very relatively cheap place to live. We have amazing natural resources. Traffic is reasonable. You might not think that, but you know, if you're coming from California, traffic is extremely reasonable. And then, of course, people are moving here for a wide variety of reasons, right? Most people think like, well, these Californians are moving in, but the reality is people are moving here for very different reasons. It could be because you're moving here as a place to raise your kids and to raise your family, which is what I did. I moved here because I had a daughter and I thought Idaho was a better place to raise my kid than Florida was. It could also be as a place where you can work and recreate in your backyard, right? You can find a job here and then you can go skiing in the winter and you can go whitewater rafting. You can play a couple of rounds of golf. There's a lot of different things that you can do. It could also be that you move here again to recreate, but you could still keep your job somewhere else if you are able to work remotely. Or it could be a place where you want to retire. So there's all these different reasons why people are moving here. I don't think that's going to change. And of course, the last one is as a place where you can find people with a similar mindset, right? So people are moving here because they have similar values and this is a place where they want to be. So we need to realize people are moving here for a variety of reasons. I don't think there is anything that's going to really dramatically change. So I think people are going to continue to move. And what we need to realize when you think about the future, though, is that we need to start thinking about the people that are coming in and what that means for our communities. So we need to think about things like, okay, what does it mean that we now have investors buying up our land? Right? An investor makes a different decision, has a different bottom line than a local landowner has. They just make decisions in a very different way, and we need to realize that. So we need to realize that there is more investment going on. There's a little bit of a different way of thinking about it. Think about it, somebody who has been here, whose family has been here for three generations, makes a decision differently than somebody who just moved in. A national builder makes decisions differently. They're here to sell product. They're not investing in their community like a local builder might do. Think about a big national chain. A big national chain operates differently, probably uses different suppliers for the product than a local restaurant does. A local restaurant is much more likely to use local supplies. So there's all these different kind of changes going on. I think we're going to continue to see people wanting to go here. We might see more people moving out. We might see these things. But I think we're going to be on this trajectory for a long time. I have a good friend who said, oh, those home prices, they're going to go down because, you know, that it can't be like this. It's this boom and bust cycle. And yeah, there is a boom and bust cycle, but the underlying trend will still be that we continue to grow for probably quite a while. So I think what we're doing, what is going on now, that line will continue going up. There's no reason to think that all of a sudden we'll have less people nobody wants to move to Idaho anymore. I don't think that's going to change at all. We might see some changes in people moving in and people moving out, you know, for different reasons. But I think we'll continue to grow. And the change is probably a little bit less right now because of interest rates are so high. So the change that was really going quite dramatically, that probably slowed down a little bit right now. That's probably calming down a little bit. But we'll go back up again. So I think the general trend is we'll have to deal with more and more people. And that's okay. I think the other part of that lesson is we'll have to deal with more and more people. We're no longer in the middle of nowhere. We're in the middle of all the action. And that means that we need to start realizing that and start making decisions in a different way. And if we don't, there was a presentation, I think it was in 2018, by Robert Liberty. And he made this interesting comment. He hadn't been in Boise for a while. And he says, wow, Boise has really changed. And he says, you know, guys, you really need to think about this because if you don't pay attention, all this beautiful stuff that you like so much will be gone before you blink your eyes. And that really stuck to me, right? And I think it's still the case. We need to realize our reality has changed. The people that are coming here have changed. There's more investors. there's more foreign investment, there is, you know, there's different people are interested in our place now that will continue. And we just need to really start paying attention to that and take some action to make sure that those communities that we have in mind, you know, those comprehensive plan that I talked with you about earlier, right? If we want to actually get there, we need to start really thinking about those land use regulations and how we actually get there. Probably much more aggressively than we have done in the past.
Thanks so much, Jaap, for this, and a great reminder to keep our eyes open about how our communities are changing so we can make decisions about what we want it to look like. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much.
Okay, Lee, what did you think?
Okay, so it's really interesting. I hadn't quite put all of the pieces together. I mean, I obviously knew people moved around, but I hadn't quite thought about what that meant with people moving in and out of the state for the dynamics of a community. Due to the fact that I probably have some control issues that I could work through, it's also a little unnerving because, you know, I didn't quite think about how much all of that movement would affect everybody else, like who is living in the state, including myself. And the fact that maybe there are things that like I could do or my community could do to influence how the results of all this people movement. But my initial thing was like, oh my gosh, I can't control this. What do I do? I want to buy a house. How does all this happen? So there was a few moments of panic, but it sounds like Jaap knows what he's doing. So hopefully they will work through the city planning on this and be prepped for the future.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot to get used to the idea that your community is changing by a bunch of people making a bunch of their own individual decisions that add up to a community. Jaap has also talked about how city planners have a lot of tools to help shape communities by, say, incentivizing certain behaviors like traveling by walking, cycling, public transit, or personal vehicles. We didn't get too much of that in this conversation, though. I was really intrigued when Jaap described that young people in particular were leaving the state at high rates. I guess I didn't know that before, but it definitely feels true to my experience living in Idaho towns where a lot of youth end up going elsewhere as they grow up.
Yeah, I can't say that I'm any different. I moved a lot during those years. It also, while you were talking, it just made me think that, you know, I mean, despite my first reaction being like, oh my gosh, how's it going to change? That change isn't necessarily bad, it's just unknown, and change can be awesome. And especially bringing in new cultures and new ideas and stuff, like, I actually like all that. I have to remind myself that, like, no, like, meeting all the new people, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Well, thanks, Lee. And thank you all for listening to The Vandal Theory. You can visit our website at uidaho.edu/vandaltheory to learn more about our research. Email us at vandaltheory@uidaho.edu. We're on all the podcast platforms. Please rate, review, and subscribe. I'm Kyle Fawnensteel.
And I'm Lee Cooper.
Thanks for listening.